What if one of the most powerful leadership skills is also one of the rarest? In this episode of the Courage of a Leader podcast, I'm joined by the brilliant Saleen Williams, award-winning executive coach, international speaker, and trusted advisor, who brings a blend of empathy, edge, and practical wisdom. Together, we dive into the often overlooked but absolutely game-changing skill of critical thinking. Get ready for insights that will challenge assumptions, sharpen your decision-making, and spark new possibilities for you and your team. Welcome to the Courage of a Leader podcast. This is where you hear real life stories of top leaders achieving extraordinary results. And you get practical advice and techniques you can immediately apply for your own success. This is where you will get inspired and take bold, courageous action. I'm so glad you can join us. I'm your host, Amy Riley. Now, are you ready to step into the full power of your leadership and achieve the results you care about most? Let's ignite the courage of a leader. Saleen, thank you for being on the Courage of a Leader podcast today.
Thank you for having me. I'm very excited to talk to you.
Yes, me too. We always have a good time. And I'm excited about the skill we are going to talk about today. I think it is a skill that is not talked about enough in workplaces, about how critical it is. And that is the skill of critical thinking. Saleen, will you start off by telling us, how do you define or think about critical thinking, and why is it important?
That's a very large question to start with, which I appreciate. I think the easiest way, and I'm going to caveat that this is not the like book definition of critical thinking. I'm going to make this really simple on purpose. Okay.
Yes.
So if you were to look up a textbook on critical thinking, I'm sure it would have a much more precise definition. But what I would say, especially with what I see showing up in organizations and with leaders, that critical thinking is the ability to see something, to think about things from a variety of perspectives.
Nice.
To look at it without the inherent biases or assumptions that we have built in driving the outlook that we are hoping to see, then to be able to use that information to make better decisions.
Actually, I'd love to interject right
Please.
There. I like that you're talking about the variety of perspectives, right? Not just the filter that our upbringing, our functional skill building and knowledge building and exposure that we've had to date tells us, without bias, right? Like without infused with our hope that the answer is going to be X,
yes.
But willing to be somewhat detached there and really take an objective look from different angles.
Yes.
Love it.
Yes. I think it is one of the most important skills a leader can have. And it's also one of the rarest skills that any human has these days.
Why is it important, Saleen?
Well, because otherwise we all tend to fall into the pattern of doing things the way that we're comfortable doing things.
Yes.
And this is the way it's all, why? If it ain't broke, don't fix it. Mentality,
everything's a nail. Right? I'm going to keep using this approach. This worked here. It can work here again. And I mean,
exactly.
And sometimes we can find solutions from what's worked in the past. Yet, are we pausing and considering this from different angles?
Yes. And this is not to say that the way we have done things is sometimes the best way for right now, even if it's not forever, that maybe that is the ideal solution. That's absolutely, that can be the truth. There's, it's not to say, let's just destroy everything and start fresh over and over again. It is, critical thinking is really about being intentional about those choices and about ensuring that we're operating from the best information and with the best information available to us in the moment, considering all of the avenues, not just the things we're comfortable considering, and starting from that.
Yes. Intentional, conscious.
Oh, yes.
And willing to think about the answers we might not be hoping for.
Yes.
I like it.
Yes.
Celine, my how brain wants to get more into the how, but first let me tell listeners a little bit more about you. Celine Williams is the founder of Revisionary, a boutique consulting firm that partners with growth-minded leaders and executive teams around the world. With over 20 years of experience in leadership development, culture design, and organizational transformation, Celine brings a rare blend of strategic insight and human-centered expertise. She's an award-winning executive coach, international speaker, and trusted advisor known for her mix of empathy, edge, and practical wisdom. She also hosts two acclaimed podcasts, lectures at top business schools, and helps leaders unlock clarity, connection, and momentum in the moments that matter most. We'll have some links in the show notes so that you can get connected with Celine. But thanks again for sharing your expertise and your time with us today.
I love doing this. I love these conversations. I always enjoy talking to you. And truly, the more we can talk about, whether it's critical thinking or other like real practical leadership skills and opportunities, the more we're going to have leaders that are actually thinking and doing and improving in these areas. And that's what it's all about.
Yes, couldn't agree more. How do we do it? How do we critical think in these leadership moments?
Yeah, I would love to say, listen, here's the three things that we just do over and over again, and it's solved.
Right. No more.
Unfortunately, that's not the case. But I joke. And also, there are real things that we can do to improve our critical thinking for ourselves, for those around us, to really even be, here's the thing. If we are being really mindful and intentional about critical thinking and about how we make decisions, we can take some steps to improve it just from that starting point. And what I mean by that is, if we, first and foremost, we all have to be willing to say, we all have biases. All have biases. They come with where we were born, who we are in the world, who our parents were, how we were raised, how we were educated, where we've been in the world, what, like, you name it.
We've been exposed to. Yep.
Exactly. We all have biases that are inside of us as a result of all these things. And biases are great because it's our brain trying to keep us safe. So let's not say all biases are. We have them because our brain is like, hey, I care about you. I want to keep you safe. I'm connecting dots. I'm connecting the right dots because I'm still fallible, but I am connecting dots to try and keep you safe. So I am creating these biases based on things that may or may not be true in the hopes to keep you as safe as possible as a human being on this planet.
Yes. The brain saying, hey, you've never done that before. You've never considered that before. What are you doing? Come back to this thing you know. Over here.
Exactly. So they're great. We are supposed to have biases. They're not inherently bad.
Nice.
And inside of that, we also have to say they're also not all good. They're also not all there to actually serve us because they are not the truth. They are patterns and assumptions that our brain is making. So one of the key things is being willing to say, yes, I have biases, and recognize our own biases, good, bad, or ugly.
Yeah.
And then also being able to identify what they are, especially the ones that may not be true or are driving certain behaviors or patterns in the work that we're doing, the decisions we're making, the teams we're leading, whatever that case may be.
Yes. So, Celine, I'm hearing, first of all, having on our radar, having an intention to be aware about how we are thinking, how we are critically thinking, being willing to say to ourselves, I'm a human being with a brain. So I have biases.
Yes.
And I love how you named that. It's the brain doing its survival mechanism thing that it has been
Yes.
doing for us humans for centuries, right? So we can detach from it a little bit. Like, my brain is telling me this. My brain is finding this unfamiliar, right? So I'm having some judgments or some ideas about it. So how do we identify those biases? How do we check those and make sure we're a bit more conscious of how they are impacting our thinking in the moment?
So I would offer that doing it in the moment on our own is really hard.
Okay,
And
yeah.
let's not do that.
Okay.
We can all get to the point where it's a practice and we can do that and we're really good at it. But if that's our starting point in the moment, high stakes, I'm trying to do this on my own, that's really tough.
Yeah.
When it's a situation like that, having someone around you who you trust, who understands and is familiar with some of the most common biases, to be able to call them out or point them out, even if they don't know the language. I'm not as fussed about naming this is it's this type of bias. And there are
Yeah.
lists for that online and they're wonderful.
Yeah.
I'm less concerned about it's a XYZ
Halo
bias.
bias or a, yeah.
Right. I'm less concerned about the name of it versus like pointing out that there is a bias, and let's talk about that. If you have a trusted person, great. If not, when you're not in as high stakes environment, if you think through some of the decisions that you've made, some of the situations that you faced and how you've thought about them or worked through them, we can often then start to break apart patterns and biases inside of those. And so doing it when
Nice.
it's not in a high stakes. So, for example, it can be something like a really easy one. I'm going to use a hiring example. So,
Sure.
we're
Yeah.
doing interviews to hire someone, and we tend to, like, when there's someone who went to the same university or college that we did, we're like, oh my gosh, this, did you go here? And, da, 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 da. And then at the end of
Yeah.
that interview, we're like, man, I really liked Amy. She was awesome.
Yeah. We're
So,
talking about Saturdays at the football games.
right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. It's a silly example, but there's a bias there. Like, we're like, oh, someone has a similar background to me. I am feeling a certain way. If we then have 10 of the 15 shortlisted people who went to the same college that we went to, we can start to say, okay, so where are these? Again, don't care if you name the bias, but where am I seeing these patterns in how I've approached things and thought about things to start to identify the biases, which then helps me in those moments of when I'm under pressure, think about what's driving this? Where is this coming from?
Yeah.
Am I thinking of other possibilities? Am I looking at other potential perspectives? Am I shutting down or opening up too soon or whatever the case may be?
Yes. Okay. I love this, Celine. I mean, I'm hearing the invitation that we could look back at the decisions or the reactions that we had over the past week, over the past month. We could look at it in retro and what was at play, right? What were the
Yes.
variables I was most leaning on? What was the rationale I was most leaning on?
Yes.
I also love this question. If we witness a behavior from somebody, let's just say we walk into a physical room and someone is staring off out the window silently, or let's say they're doing that during a meeting. Right. If it was our highest performer, we might think, oh, right, they're thinking about how this can work, right? They're strategizing about how this is going to go. If they're our lowest performer, we might think, oh, they're distracted. They're looking out of the window right now, right? If we ask ourselves, what would I think if it was this person that I have really high regard for? What if it was this person, right? And what is it changing my reaction and my behavior in that moment, right? Or
Yes.
even if you're making a decision about a product line, what would I think if it was the A product line versus the E product line? Like, and why am I thinking about that differently to kind of tease out what are my positive assumptions? What are my negative assumptions? What are my seemingly neutral assumptions?
Yes.
Because all of those are going to have filters and bias that have some impact.
100%. And I would say there is a tool that you can use in critical thinking. We're in the moment of
Yep.
making a decision. And I'm going to put a pin in something to come back to because the decision itself, like defining that, I want to come back to that.
Oh,
But
okay. Yep.
once we have, this is what we're facing, this is the
Yep.
decision, this is the moment. If we take the time to pause and actually write out, and especially if there's other people involved, write
Collective
it out
unit. Yep.
first. Do not say it out loud, right? So
Okay.
start by
Write
writing
my
it
own.
out.
You
Write your
write your
own.
own.
You
Okay.
write your own. I write my own. We're going to write out all the assumptions we have.
Nice.
Good, bad, or ugly. What are the
Yep.
assumptions that are here? Some of them are not going to matter, and that's okay. But if we do this all individually and then we share it after, we'll get a real sense of what those assumptions are. With again, there will be bias inherent in them. If we are familiar with our own biases, we can start to see that and then pull apart those assumptions like, oh, this assumption I'm making is based on this bias I have. That's not a real thing. I'm okay to pull. Let's move that off because it's not, now that I've seen it, I don't have to spend the time on it. But there's a whole practice of writing out, or there
Like
can
that.
be, there should, I wish there was more often, a whole practice of writing out the
Yes.
assumptions that we have about a project, a decision, a problem that we're facing, whatever the case may be. If we can do that for ourselves, we will make better decisions. We will end up with stronger, more sustainable, more whatever you want to call it, strategies. We solve problems more effectively if we understand the assumptions first.
Yes. And I'm thinking, Celine, if this feels like a jump for a team, ooh, this feels too vulnerable. I'm not sure if I want to put that out there. Find an anonymous way to do it. Have a shared document where people can add those assumptions in there in random order. I don't know, right? But just so that you get them all out on the
Yes.
table and begin to build that muscle of defining, recognizing, and deciding which assumptions to leave behind.
100%, because some of the assumptions we have are going to be based on biases. If we know that and we can identify that, we can push that to the side in the sense that it's probably not as relevant
Or I don't
for
want
the
that running the show.
If
Yeah.
it's based on past experience and less of a bias, but like I had this experience, so I have this assumption now, we can then ask the question, is that relevant? Does that matter in this situation? Right? Is
Yeah.
that, if it is something that we, it like, is this something that could be true? Is it something that may not be? Who is involved? What has to happen? What are the realities of this? We can then start to ask better questions of the situation based on how we're categorizing some of the assumptions that we make or that we are making. Because, by the way, we're all always making assumptions as well as having biases. We are human
Yes.
beings and our brains love to do
Yes.
this. So let's acknowledge it and do something about it and bring it to light
Yeah.
so that we can address it as opposed to shuffling it under the rug, for lack of a better
Yeah.
term. And then
Yeah.
it becomes what I always call ghost assumptions, which they are the assumptions that are driving us,
Yeah.
but we're not actually recognizing or acknowledging. And then it's like, what? How did that happen?
So many of you tell me you want your team to be more proactive, that you want to stop putting out fires or following up all the time. You want your team to take ownership, keep moving things forward, and get more done in the day. How can you figure out how to do this with your team? You can take the Inspire Your Team to Greatness assessment that I've created to answer these burning questions that so many of my client leaders have posed. It's worked for them. And it'll work for you. In less than 10 minutes, find out what's getting in the way and how you can get your team to get more done during the day without you having to hover over them. In my nearly 3 decades of work with leaders at all levels and across industries, I've discovered the 11 things that leaders do, even very well-intentioned leaders do, that kill productivity. Take the Inspire Your Team to Greatness assessment, and you'll get a custom report that will tell you step by step what you need to do to guarantee that your team is more proactive and productive.
It's absolutely free of charge, and it'll create a win-win-win. It's a win for me when you share your great results from the assessment with other leaders. It's a win for you, and it's ultimately a win for your team and organization as you collectively accomplish more. Click on the assessment link in the show notes now to change the course of your leadership and inspire your team to new heights and to demonstrate the courage of a leader.
A couple of examples are popping into my mind, Celine. Like, one, if there's just this assumption, like, marketing always slows us down.
Yeah.
Right. And it can seem like a pretty, okay, it seems like a not great, like mildly negative, right? Or somewhat like neutral. Like, I might feel like I have some evidence to how that can be true. But if we don't call that out and say, you know what, like, that perspective is not serving us, let's start to influence that relationship, right? Let's look for evidence of how that's not true.
Yes.
And I think sometimes there can be seemingly neutral assumptions, like it takes 6 months to launch a product like this. Does it have to in the future?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. Absolutely. And
interesting.
If we write that, if we state that it takes 6 months to launch a product like this, if we state that, then to your point, we can ask the question, does it have to? Is that always, what has to happen for that not to be the case? What needs to change so that it doesn't take 6 months?
Yeah.
Maybe 6 months isn't enough time, and that's why our products aren't working as well as we hope.
Yeah.
So what needs to change for them to launch more effectively? Maybe it needs 8 months and we're missing a step, right? Like, so if we state the assumption, we can then ask a better question.
Or I get excited about these conversations that can happen once one is out on the table.
100%.
Okay, now let's examine this sucker, right? Now we can, now we can have some fun. Now
absolutely.
We can get creative, but we've got to have that courage to put that out there.
And let's acknowledge this, Amy, it takes a lot of courage to put it out there. It takes a lot of courage. I mean, I would say when it comes to critical thinking, most of the exercises, steps, strategies in critical thinking take courage because they are not the norm. They are not what's expected. Leaders are expected to think critically without doing any of this. And which is why they often don't, no offense to leaders, it's not a single person. It's a systemic issue because they're not given the space or taught how to. It's just like, we assume you're thinking critically. So just think critically. And it takes courage to institute these changes and be willing to have these conversations. Because they're going to be uncomfortable.
Yes.
And healthy tension is exceptionally valuable when it comes to critical thinking.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just thinking, like, leaders, if you can begin to build this muscle, have yourself model it for your team and bring your team courageously into these conversations, what a game changer.
Absolutely.
Okay. Now, Celine, you had us put a pin in something.
Yes.
And that was defining the decision.
Yes. So the reason I said, let's put a pin in this is because one of the challenges, let's call it, that I see across the board, whether it's large organizations, small organizations, teams, groups, departments, whatever the case may be, is misconstruing a symptom for a problem.
Okay, yes.
And what I mean by that is there is an issue, and that is a symptom of something, and there's not enough digging into what's really going on or what's really behind it to identify the correct problem.
And the root cause,
the root cause. And then we are making decisions that are not based on the best information because we're not doing the critical thinking to get to the root cause, or at least as close to the root cause. Sometimes we don't know enough to get truly to what, right? Like, that does happen, but we can dig deep enough to get close enough to it.
And then stay in the inquiry.
Correct.
Over time. Do you have an example you can share with us, Celine, of
of a symptom, be of confusing a symptom for a root
Yeah.
cause. Yes. So there are, I'm gonna try to anonymize this as much as possible.
Okay.
So an example would be a company is struggling with sales. There's what's worked in the past isn't working as well as it has. The sales leaders are looking at how do we solve this?
Yep.
And not enough sales, people aren't selling enough. And so it's like, okay, well, if we hire people to do a certain amount of follow-up, there's a specific title there that I'm blanking on to even give, but like to do the connecting and follow-up. If they're following up, operationalizing, doing this piece behind, then we'll have more closing of the sales. I'll have better information, whatever the case may be.
So we're assuming that we need to fix this problem
This is
of
the problem
there
we need to
needs to be
fix.
more follow-up. We need
There needs to
more
be more
people
follow-up.
doing that.
And I'm anonymizing it as much as possible. This is an example I have seen in two different large
Oh,
organizations, very
okay.
similar to this, where it's like, okay, well, we just need these people to do this thing that will then fix the problem and we'll close more
We
sales.
need more activity. Yeah,
Right.
okay.
And new people doing this will solve that, as opposed to the real problem. Like when we've done some of the work to step further back from that,
Yeah.
the problem is not that the activity isn't there or that there's not enough people going out and talking to potential clients.
Yeah.
It's that there's a disconnect with the product, or that the product isn't solving the problem that they really have, or that there are better offers out there that are more compelling. So the problem was not the activity. The
Yeah.
problem was you had to ask another five questions to get behind it,
Yeah, which could
and
be scary to
it's very
admit.
scary.
Our
Yes.
solution might not be the best in the market, or our competitor is demonstrating something better than we are right now. Like, that's a scarier conclusion
Way
to come
scarier
to.
than we just need more. We need more activity so we have more
Yeah.
sales. That's a symptom. Like I understand that is a symptom, and we feel we can solve that. We can hire more people. We can do more activity.
Yep.
But we're not solving the problem, and we're not doing
Yeah.
something that actually addresses, or we are not even making decisions to help address the problem in the future when we're only looking at this piece of it. And that is the other scary thing. So if the problem is our product is not as competitive on the market as it once was, if we admit that, then it changes the decisions we're making fundamentally about the future.
Yeah.
And the only way to create something that is sustainable or has potential in the future is to identify that problem to be able to do something about it.
Yes.
But if we do that, then we're admitting we have, like, it is a cycle. I understand how scary that is and
Yeah.
how big that can feel, how overwhelming it can feel, but
Yeah.
it is the only way to potentially change the future, as
Yeah.
opposed to just let's do some busy stuff that doesn't actually have an impact.
Yes, and we have been programmed, we've been socialized to get busy and do something to
Yes.
solve the situation at hand, to capitalize on an opportunity, whatever it might be. Leaders are immediately going to, okay, what are we going to do next? Instead of slowing down, stepping back. Doesn't have to be for months, but like what is the problem? What is the decision? What is the opportunity? How are we defining that? Are we sure we fully understand that? And yes, there might be some immediate actions to take, but we can stay engaged in that definition and that inquiry over time. Cool.
So I love what you just said, and I want to emphasize it
Yeah.
because it is not either or. There are likely activities that can be done right now
Yeah.
to move stuff forward, to be productive, to whatever. And we are thinking about the bigger problem and hopefully making some progress and choices there. The difference is that the activities that we are going to choose to do right now to hopefully drive some changes are probably going to be different than if when we understand what the real problem is. So it's not to say we're not doing anything now. It's that we can make better choices about even the immediate activities when we understand what the core problem is.
Yes. And see what kind of impact those immediate activities have or don't have.
Exactly. Absolutely.
Okay, Celine, you've given us a lot of good stuff here. Let me end with this question. So if I'm a leader listening and I'm thinking, oh, right, like we are just always running and assembling the plane as we're flying, and I haven't talked to my team about bias or assumptions or clarifying decisions in a disciplined way, where do they get started?
I'm going to give the answer that nobody likes first, and then I'm going to give a more acceptable answer. But the answer is that it really does depend on each leader's situation and their team situation. So there is a reality.
It depends, right.
Right. And so I'm going to say it depends, because there is no one size fits all for any of this.
Whatever you got most excited about as you were listening to this right. conversation, right? It's probably fitting for your situation. But okay.
Right.
Continue.
So I saying that, I truly, if leaders start with having people pause and write their thoughts down. So if we can just get rid of brainstorming in the way that we do, where it's just like everyone popcorns up ideas and we all build on ideas, that would be the best and easiest way to start some critical thinking. Because we know when that happens, people build on what other people have said. They don't come up with their own ideas in the same way. They're often stifled from sharing their ideas. If it's different than if my boss says something that's totally opposite to what I was going to say, I am far less likely to share my idea, even if it's a better idea, because I have more current information.
Hands
far
on.
Less likely to. So the easiest thing I would say across the board, broad generalization.
Yeah.
But the easiest thing.
Oh, I like this.
Stop that. If we want to brainstorm, if we want to come up with ideas as a group, we're not
individual reflection first.
Individual reflection first.
Great.
And individual reflection that involves writing down our ideas. So that, and then everyone is encouraged, and how you encourage it, this is where the how becomes nuanced. But then we're encouraging people to share the things they've written down in different ways, and not about Amy says it's X, Y, Z. And I go, yes, it's what I agree. We're not doing that. We're not agreeing with Amy. No offense, Amy. We love you. But Amy shares it. That gets written down. And then I share the thing that's on my list. And if it is the same as yours, but it's written slightly differently, I'll share it the way it's shared, the way I've written it down.
Yep.
But some version of that is probably the easiest thing to implement to start to change or start to recognize different perspectives, start to open up the conversation so there is less bias and there are fewer assumptions that are not spoken about.
Yeah, I love it. I think that is a great practical piece of guidance for leaders to start, that individual reflection written down, everybody shares it, and then stop this stuff of where, oh, it's Amy's ideas and it's Sammy's idea and it's blah, blah, blah. Name the idea by the idea.
Yes.
Right? We're not creating camps here.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Celine, thank you so much for talking about this critical skill of critical thinking with me on the podcast today. I really appreciate your time and your thoughts on this.
It is my pleasure. Thank you for having me. I love talking about it, so it's greatly appreciated.
Thank you. Thank you for listening to the Courage of a Leader podcast. If you'd like to further explore this episode's topic, please reach out to me through the Courage of a Leader website at www.courageofaleader.com. I'd love to hear from you. Please take the time to leave a review on iTunes. That helps us expand our reach and get more people fully stepping into their leadership potential. Until next time, be bold and be brave, because you've got the courage of a leader.